Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, an unusual and for many an abstract, existential, or almost an unfathomable concept that all life is energy, and all energy holds all the information it needs for its own survival. We're going to look at a topic that rarely, if ever, is discussed in the media, and that is energy healing. At the core of this discussion will be a scientist who, in my opinion, was one of the most brilliant scientists in American history, Dr. Royal Rife. And back in the early part of the last century, the 20th century, he was doing work, especially with breast cancer, where he was able to have a very high degree of success using different light vibrations. Now, mind you, this was before computers and the ability to maximize the ability to vibrate an energy, and still he had success. We have in our body anywhere from 50 to 100 trillion cells. These cells know what they're supposed to do for their entire life. They do not need a single input. In fact, we have no idea what most of these cells really do. We just accept that about every 8 seconds we blink. And we do that our entire life. If we didn't, within one 24-hour cycle of not blinking, your eyes would be chafed and you'd be blind. If you sit down, your heart rate goes down. If you stand up, it speeds up. If you walk fast, it speeds up. If you jog, it goes faster. If you're racing very fast, the heart beats. And when you slow down, the heart slows down accordingly. When you eat a steak, it digested at one level, a pH concentration of hydrochloric acid. But if you ate a baked potato, a different one. If you had an apple, a different one. It knows how long you have to sleep in order to recover what you had depleted or exhausted the day before, when it goes through its catabolic cleansing and detoxification cycle, coming into an anabolic or high energy cycle. It knows when there's a bacterium or a parasite so small the naked eye cannot see it. Maybe on your salad, looks good, but think how many people right now have hepatitis A from eating contaminated salads that we were told were washed and clean and U.S. inspected. But these little creatures got by all that, but it didn't get by your intestine. You immediately get diarrhea, and it flushes out of the system or does the best it can. You come in contact with additional viruses, or you already have viruses. Your immune system is at one level. You don't manifest symptoms. The immune system goes down. Suddenly, those latent viruses become very active, or the virus that you were exposed to manifests in you having a runny nose, a sore throat, coughing. The body's trying to expel the virus. How does it know? Now imagine that there are 50 trillion biochemical processes happening every single millisecond of your life, yet not one scientist in world history has figured out how it all comes together. It's all life energy. In fact, think of it this way. The moment you die, the only thing that's missing is not your heart, it's there, or your lungs, or your stomach, or liver, kidney, but your life energy is gone. You would think that life energy that one time was studied because people didn't know why we were alive, why we died, we would have that in our medical school curriculum, where doctors would have courses on life energy. But we don't. We start with the next step, as if the only thing our body is capable of is what we're able to define, understand, and in some way augment, implement, or interfere with. And hence our entire medical complex is based upon turning off a symptom, controlling symptoms. And one day you wake up and you're on 11 different medications. Half of those medications to counter are the side effects of the other medications. Now, they may be working, controlling a symptom. They do nothing to change the underlying cause of the disease. And then along comes some people. One is named Maurice Bales, who had worked for years at NASA, who holds 6 patents, who is an engineer, and he looks at it through his unique prism, and he sees what earlier work done by this wonderful scientist that I mentioned, Roy Rife, that he can take those vibrations today, those frequencies, and a bacteria of a particular type of bacteria has one frequency, a cancer has a different frequency, a diabetic neuropathy has a different frequency, and there are hundreds of thousands of frequencies. And by creating a frequency, can interfere with a frequency, and hence either slow down, stop, or in many cases, eliminate that frequency from the body, and hence eliminate at that moment that disease. It's a work in progress. I've seen it demonstrated. It is still going forward. But two of the people, probably the only two people that I'm aware of who are doing this work in the United States today, are going to be on this program for this hour. The other person is Dr. Lynn Saputo, S-A-P-U-T-O. He is a board-certified physician in internal medicine and founder of the medical director of Health Medicine Foundation, which is an educational foundation promoting an integral medical system of wellness in his clinical practice. And for 30 years, he also had a private practice in affiliation with John Muir Medical Center in San Francisco. He's been a practicing physician since 1965 after graduating from Duke University's medical school. He's co-authored and edited 6 books on complementary and alternative medicine. His last book was A Return to Healing, Radical Healthcare Reform and the Future of Medicine, which won the Nautilus Gold Award, which critiques the dominant conventional medical establishment and paradigm and its dismal failures and what an integral approach to healing can provide to make medicine more humane and healthy and sustainable. More recently, he has been deeply involved with research into light therapy, funded by the National Institutes of Health through the University of California, San Francisco. He also won, as an athlete, the World Series Men's Singles Tennis Championship and on 2 occasions, and was formerly ranked number 1 in the world by the International Tennis Federation. His website is drsaputo.com. Nice to have you both with us today, Maurice and Len.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. Good to hear your voice.
Before we go to what this does in clinical experience and in testing, I've only seen it demonstrated in a simple show me how this works medium. I want you to know that for more than 40 years, I've had people at different levels of society, mainly scientists, come to me and say, especially when I was at the Institute of Applied Biology and a senior fellow, because I was open to doing experiments with energy, did a lot of them. And I remember the last person who came was a scientist from UCLA. And he believed that it duplicated Roy Rife's frequencies. And he tried it on a series of people. In this case, he believed that he could reverse herpes. And I had a lot of people that I was working with who had herpes. And so they volunteered, and he worked on them, and no success. I was working with several physicians at that time through the Tri-State Healing Center, and so we had a dozen physicians, board-certified physicians. And then another person came from another university. He believed he had mastered Roy Rife's frequencies, and he believed he could help cancer. Well, we had a lot of people with cancer. He was not able to help them. But at least he tried. And I gave each person, since it's a non-toxic and non-invasive therapy, an opportunity to see, could they make a difference? They did not. We were able to make a difference, by the way, and reverse herpes and reverse hepatitis and reverse cancers in other people, but using completely different holistic and non-invasive protocols. But I always believed that the door should be open. And then one day, I got a call, and then a woman shows up at the radio studio, and she was a very elderly woman, but just as bright in her smile and beaming eyes, and Johnny Lee McFadden. She was the wife of Bernard McFadden, the great health, probably the number one health advocate of the early 20th century. And they owned a series of health spas, cleansing and detox centers around the United States. And everything we're doing today around the world, he was doing it then. And he had been an advocate of Dr. Kellogg, and who was the surgeon who was one of the two brothers that founded Kellogg's of Battle Creek, Michigan. And they were using therapies then in the 1800s that today we would consider cutting edge. And she took me up to a place upstate New York, and I met a woman, an elderly woman that day. We're going back 40 years. And this woman had all these slides laid out on, and photographs laid out on tables. And she had been Royal Rife's assistant. And no one ever knew where all this research went. He kept some was published, but this was the heavy-duty stuff. And the reason that this had never become public is because the medical authorities were always chomping on him, always attacking him. And he felt, according to the woman, that had he brought forward all the good work he was able to do, including people who were diagnosed with mental conditions, they would completely dismiss him as a nut job. But this was all the references, and she had all this stuff laid out, all the notes galore. I never knew what happened to her, and Johnny Lee died within the year, so I never was able to follow up. But you have. So Maurice, let's start with you, and first tell the audience what you know about the man who made it all possible to understand the frequencies of life and disease and health. The form is yours.
Well, over the past 20 years, I've worked making light treatment devices, which Dr. Saputo has used on thousands of patients. Several years ago, a close person to me was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. And so I felt that I had to continue my work and try to use frequencies to treat the cancer. And basically, I had used the Rife frequencies that were published before that. I had incorporated inputs to my instrument so that those frequencies could be used. But every time I used them or tried to use them, the results were no better than just using the light that my instruments put out. So I researched Rife, tried to read all of his data that he had, and found out that the frequencies that were published were just half of the puzzle. What happened is he used two oscillators and beaded the frequencies together, audio frequencies and a 3.3 megahertz carrier, to generate the sidebands that he used. And he made a microscope, and then he used, because cancer is so small, he obtained, well, first of all, he obtained some tumors from women that surgery that had breast cancer. And then he used ceramic filters to limit the size that anything could go through. And he said that the viruses were between 1/120th and 1/40th of a millionth of a meter, 1 micron. And so you couldn't see them on a microscope. And he made it his microscope, which is sort of equivalent to a lot of the microscopes today. But he found out that if he ionized gas, that neon gas, that he could actually light up these viruses would light up with light, and they would be like red purple colors. when they were alive. And so he then tuned his frequencies together, beat them together until the vibration stopped. And that's how he did his research. And so he did that. And in 1934, he had 16 patients with cancer and tuberculosis that he successfully treated. And I guess it's well documented. So anyway, when I looked at his data, I decided that what I would do would be sort of a modern version, but not exactly like Rife's. I would make mine digital, and it would not have the same kind of waveforms, but hopefully that it would do sort of a similar thing. I was using LED lights that are very powerful LED lights, and then modulating the LED lights with these sidebands that I produced. And it looks like a lot of the work that he did, he also said that these viruses can change from one kind of virus to another kind of virus, not just like frequency, but they can warp from one thing back, and they can move around like that. And so, which makes it more difficult if you did have one frequency that would do something and it morphs into something else, then of course you're not going to get it. So also in his notes, he doesn't say really how many treatments that somebody needs to take care of something. So, and we, Dr. Saputo and I, have found that we need to treat somebody a minimum of three or four times before the treatment will hold. In other words, if you just treat somebody one session, a lot of times, like in 3 days, the symptoms will come back. So we feel that with the background that we have with the 20 years of working together on all these patients, that that this is the next step in trying to get rid of the pathogens that cause so much grief. Now, I'd also like to say that one of my patents is the use of the light to treat people, but also we use an infrared camera, a high-resolution infrared camera, and we take a reference image, and then when we start, we open another image, and we treat the patient, and we watch the blood flow changes in the tissue dynamically. So I think that's why that Dr. Saputo has had such great success in treating people, is because you can actually tell when it's working for you. Whereas if you just have a light and you shine the light somewhere, well, maybe that's supposed to be the treatment place, but a lot of times the body, even like if somebody has a bad back, well, usually it's along the dermatome distributions that you treat. But sometimes when the back has failed, things change and you need to treat other areas. So, camera is invaluable.
Maurice, yes. I need you to explain in lay language, because it's a very esoteric concept, that every cell in the body, as I mentioned before, knows what to do without ever being told. I mean, if your heart knows to beat faster, standing up, and then slower, slowing down, how did it know that? How did it know to digest one food versus another, how to blink the eyes to protect them? But it does. And this is that innate knowledge. And these are all frequencies, and the frequencies are controlled by electrical impulses, and when we're dead, those are gone. There's no, they're flatline. Where did the electrical impulse go? Where did the messengers go? Where did the history of how the cell should function go? It was all there at the beginning. And we're not asking even the right questions about life. So when we find out, or Rife found out, and you have furthered that research, that every disease state that has a frequency. But first you have to determine what that frequency is. And then how do you create a frequency to diminish it, control it, or eliminate it?
Well, my belief is it's just like the power lines. You know, the power lines are use 60 hertz, and it, the way they figure out the wavelength is really the speed of light, and then they divide that by the frequency, and that tells you how long the wave is. And basically, when they design waveguides, they use a quarter wavelength of the frequency in space so that the frequency is not, you don't lose the frequency. It isn't attenuated with when it goes through the waveguide. And it turns out that a half wavelength is just the opposite. So that's just physics. And I believe that it's the same in the human body. If you want to, if you find a frequency or you think you know the frequency that will destroy something, I think if you use a half wavelength of that frequency that you have a good opportunity to shake it, just like the singer shaking, breaking the glass. I don't know if that answers your question.
All right, we know that there are more than 70 different types of herpes, many more. How do you know that it's a herpes virus or hepatitis virus or Epstein-Barr virus? There are thousands of viruses. How do you know which virus you're working with, and how do you know what frequency to use in order to destroy the virus, and how long does it take?
Well, to answer your question, always what we've done with our thermal imager is we correlate the patient's complaint with the evidence that we see. And so I have a little device that puts out a frequency, and it puts it out, and then it waits a few thousandths of a second, and then it sees if any of that frequency is still there. And if it is, it records it and displays it. It's kind of like a spectrum analyzer. And then you decide what range you want to sweep over. But many people have researched the frequencies of the viruses and bacteria. And so we have an idea of where, if somebody has this virus, where it would be, what frequency it would be. So if somebody has a head cold, for an example, and we scan them, we should see an influenza peak, one of the virus peaks. And if so we can then program that peak in and treat the quarter and half wavelengths frequencies of that and see if we can get rid of it. Then we can again scan that peak and then see if it's gone. So that's the way we're doing it now. Now, what would be optimal is if you could obtain each virus again and do the same thing that Rife did, only maybe in a more modern way, and to see if you could get rid of the viruses or a bacterium. But the problem is these viruses don't live for a long time. And so you need to, when you do it, you have to be very quick, and you have to have the setup all set up and to do that. So it is on that, to do that, you do need to do research to find out what exactly how those frequencies have changed over time. Because Rife did like the BX cancer virus, and probably today, some doctors have asked me if I would do that, actually, and do the research to find out how much it's changed since the 30s. So I may do that.
Give us an example of a treatment that you believe would work or have proof from your own clinical experience does work with your current frequencies.
Well, I believe, first of all, that the common cold is one that when we treat with our machine with the appropriate wavelengths of light, it appears that the cold is quickly affected. Now, again, I wouldn't just do one treatment. I would treat several times over several days. And Dr. Saputo has witnessed the same thing, so we believe that we're, first of all, some of the light frequencies are very close in nanometers to what the virus frequencies are. So that's, I think, an advantage to use a light that that is close to the quarter wavelength or whatever, half wavelength of the virus.
Explain how you're creating a frequency with light, shining the light on a person's body. How does that actually impact a virus, a cancer cell, or a bacterium?
Well, I really don't know how it, besides the wavelength and shaking the virus, very small, probably doesn't take much energy to shake it to pieces if you were have the right frequency. But basically, the light-emitting diodes, each one of them, they have a wavelength. That's what they call, like blue might be, say, 460 nanometers. Well, you can actually figure out the frequency of that. You know, if you just know the speed of the light and the frequency, you can the wavelength, you can calculate the frequency, and then you could program that frequency. But that frequency would be light frequencies, which, so we have the frequency itself of the light-emitting diode that it puts out. And also, then we can modulate the current through the light-emitting diode to modulate another frequency. So there's always more than one frequency. And most likely, some of the frequencies that people are using now for viruses really aren't for the virus. They're really for the bacterium that the virus is, the host has, the virus is in the bacteria. And because they're too low, and so, you know, that really the frequencies of the viruses are going to be the frequencies of light. So, if the host is keeping the virus and you destroy the host, probably the virus will be destroyed too. So I think that's what's going on.
All right. Please hold on. You've been listening to Maurice Bales, a lifelong engineer, former NASA scientist, and he took Roel Reif's material, read his book, looked at his notes, and then took it a step further, and now is able to work with different illnesses by creating frequencies, vibrational pulses with light, a blue light, red light, that are able to interfere with that disease process. And by repeated applications, generally anywhere from, let's say, 15 minutes to 30 minutes a day for 4, 5, 6, 7 days, has had good success actually reversing disease, and including in one case a close friend of his, breast cancer, which was very advanced. Let's go over to Lynn Saputo. Nice to have you with us today, Lynn.
Thanks, Gary.
Lynn, let's examine now. Let's go back and examine this in a little more detail from a clinician's point of view. Explain to us, as a board-certified physician and someone who has published in peer-reviewed literature, who received a National Institutes of Health grant, and who studied this, but more importantly, you've been the clinician to see whether or not it works. Explain to us how you understand that it works and what circumstances you would use it in, and what have been the results.
It's like an outcome study, Gary. You know, you try something, if it works, you try it again. And you don't necessarily have to know the mechanisms, although we do know a lot of the mechanisms that are involved with what this light does. So we've known for some time that when you put a light on a blood vessel that's constricted, It then immediately releases a chemical called nitric oxide. That increases circulation to the area that's involved that you're treating. It also reduces inflammation. It increases lymphatic drainage. It increases the production of ATP, which is the energy currency of the body, by up to 50%. And those are all things that make cells work better, make tissue work better. So what we're looking at is a clinical trial each time we put this on a person and then look to see what the outcome is. So if I've got somebody who, for example, has a stroke, and the area around the stroke has tissue that's still alive but in shock, the peri-infarction area, I know that when I shine that light there and I see clinical changes, like speech gets better, or they become more alert, or in the case of someone with Alzheimer's disease, they begin to have memory recall that's better, they're more alert, they can function better, they move better, you know that you've done something that's useful. So as a clinician, I'm interested in what it does. I don't focus so much on the biophysics or the biochemistry of what's happening, although I mentioned what we have, and Maury says as well. And we treat a wide range of conditions. I mean, we're looking at things from cervical discs and lumbar discs to sports injuries to neuropathies, people with diabetes, and many other kinds of neuropathic pain. We know that we can reverse it in a matter of minutes a lot of the time. So a typical treatment that I have might be between 10 and maybe 30 minutes. Yeah, see, we have these patients in my practice. I treat them all the time, particularly people who have herpes around the mouth, and they have these horrible blisters and pain, and it lasts for sometimes a couple of weeks. If they'll come in 2 or 3 days in a row, it dries up, and it basically heals until the next episode comes by. Now, with the new approach that Maurice is developing, we'll know the resonant frequencies of those viruses, and then we go after them, and maybe they won't come back in the next time. So there are a lot of conditions that we do clinical outcome studies on to see what the result is. And if it works, we do it again. And I've been doing that for almost 20 years with Maurice. And treated thousands of patients, in particular the diabetics with neuropathy. You can take a mild to moderate case of someone who has a painful diabetic neuropathy, and in 2 treatments, most of the time, their pain is gone and it won't come back. But you treat them for, or you manage them with another 4 or 5 days of that, and you can feel fairly secure that it's not going to come back for weeks to months to sometimes years. The numbness improves dramatically. Their balance improves a lot because proprioception's improved. And you literally have people that have tears in their eyes a lot of the time because it's something that you can manage that no one else can manage. There's no treatment in medicine for the numbness of diabetes or for the loss of balance. And if you try to manage the pain, you're on lots of drugs that have a lot of side effects and really don't do that much. So that's how I approach it. It's like an outcome study.
All right. We have to be clear here. It is my opinion that until such time that there are quality, independent of you, or independent of Maurice, independent physicians who are board certified, maybe taking 100 patients with diabetic neuropathy, with cancer of the breast, with multiple sclerosis, and then having another 2 physicians behind them, not knowing what the results were, and then you have different results, and then do the same thing but with a placebo, meaning intentionally the wrong frequency is put in, one that you know would not help that condition. So you actually have a blinded study, placebo-controlled study, and then you have the results. Then I believe that there would be a major revolutionary change in medicine where people would take a look at what you're doing and say, wow, you mean that's possible? And then you could say, yeah, we did it. That's possible. And we need to get to that stage. You are what you have done from your own clinical experience, but let us be realistic. That's subjective. And if you tried to present that to a group of scientists, they would say, well, that's interesting, but that's anecdotal. So I want people not to be just accepting that this is going to go cure everything and call Dr. Sputo tomorrow morning and fly out to San Francisco, that's not the case. All right? It's simply not the case. He has had remarkable results, no results, but no harmful results. It is a non-toxic therapy. But I also know that he has been doing this out of his compassion and his sincere belief that medicine needs to change. Now, I want to jump over for a moment to that topic because it ties in with this. You've done everything right in medicine. You graduated from Duke. You got your board certification in internal medicine. You've been a practicing physician for over 40 years, 45 years, 50 years. And yet, if you were to go to any medical school in America and be a guest lecturer on this topic, the students may find that interesting. I can assure you, no department head would, and the government would not like that, because if you're right, if you and what Maurice has developed is right, they'll shut all this down because it's a direct threat to the pharmaceutical industry. Your thoughts, since this is something that's close to your heart.
Well, that's really right. You know, there are a lot of reasons why money runs everything is because our culture is oriented to think that success means you have a lot of money or you have a lot of power. So the status quo is not going to like anything that comes in that changes what a therapy is and replaces it. So there's going to be resistance and has been by the FDA already that is really unfair, but it's what's happened. And then you have to look at the doctors who are into biochemistry. We're not really into biophysics that much. I mean, a few of the doctors are for sure. But the vast majority don't think that way, so it's like it's new. And then there's no reimbursement, so you don't get paid for what you do. You have to, unless the patient is able to pay for it. And most people, if their insurance doesn't cover what's out there, they're not going to accept the treatment. So what we've wound up doing is just lowering the price so that almost anybody can afford it. If they can't afford it, we treat them anyway. So we work it on a sliding scale. So I don't make money in my practice, but I have a lot of people who are really happy, and that's why it's usually the patients that refer me other patients with the same condition who come in, and that's what we treat. So, and lastly, there has to be education. Doctors have to buy this equipment and know that they can use it because they don't know how to use it. And it's fairly technical. I would say it would take a couple of weeks of some kind of workshop or class to teach doctors the basis behind how it works and what conditions it can treat and how you go about doing it using the infrared system that Maurice has with his cameras that tell you in real time what you're doing. So there are a lot of reasons why things are like that, and you're right. I've lectured at most of the medical schools locally here, I mean, to UCSF and Stanford. They love listening to what I talk about, and when it's over, they usually say, what can I do? I mean, they don't teach that here, and we can't get it, and we want to do it. And my advice to them is finish your training, and when you're done, if you still have an interest in that, call me up, and I'll see that you get the training that you need, even if it's one-on-one. So there's a lot going on that needs to change, and change is always comes at a certain cost. And until we're based in a way that we're oriented to wanting to help people more than we care about the money that comes from what we do, we're just going to continue with this narcissistic approach of making more money and more power to be what we think is successful, not realizing it's the relationships that we deal with other human beings that is the most satisfying. I hope that my epitaph will say something like, this is a person who cared about other people, listened and helped them the best that he could, and offered those services whether they had money or not. I think that's what we need to evolve to. And as long as we're based on how much money do I make, we're in a process that just perpetuates itself. And we need to evolve to a higher level of consciousness, and that's what we're facing. So we continue to do our work, hoping that you chop wood, carry water, see what happens over a period of years now, decades now, and hope that it takes off somehow because somebody can see what's happening and move the field forward.
You mentioned about money. I believe that long ago we would have had universal health care with prevention as a component of it and led the world, but we don't. We follow everyone. I'll give you an example. Because the primary motive in all health care is money, money for the nonprofit hospital, money for the profit hospital, money for everyone in there, nurses, doctors, everybody benefits. When you can have someone take a $1 bag of saline, because it's just a dollar to create it, and charge $100 when you put it in a patient, you can't do anything in a hospital that you're not billed for. In fact, you know, them wheeling you out of the hospital in that wheelchair, even though you're fully capable of walking and will walk the moment you step out the door, you're billed for that, and it's expensive. You sleep one night in a hospital, one night, no food, no medical treatment, no nursing treatment, no doctor treatment, just lay in a hospital bed. It could be up to $1,400. You could stay in a suite at the Waldorf Astoria for less money. But I just want to share with you how bad it is. These are medical procedures, real medical procedures, for an MRI. In the United Kingdom, it's $335. In Australia, it's $30. In the United States, it's $2,871. But now let's go to a very serious one, bypass surgery. In the United Kingdom, it's $14,117. In Australia, it's $43,230. In the United States, $150,515. A hip replacement in the United Kingdom, $11,889. In Australia, $27,810. In the United States, $87,987. A knee replacement in the United Kingdom, $7,833. In Australia, $22,421. In the United States, $52,451. A normal birth delivery, just normal birth, is $2,641 in the United Kingdom, $6,846 in Australia, but $16,653 for a normal delivery in the United States. But if you got a cesarean or an episiotomy, or any of the other things they give you, it could easily go to $30,000, $35,000, $40,000. So, and that's just a sampling from the other 98%, which means that everything in our system is based upon making a profit for someone. So on the one hand, I'm a realist, and I do not see anything currently that will cause us to force change. There'll be squabbles, but it won't change. The Democrats and Republicans alike are too invested in those individuals like the Koch brothers or George Soros or all the other hundreds of think tanks and foundations and their lobbyists that donate members of Congress money at the federal level, give it to them, or at the state level through ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. And then that money then is circulated via advertising and lobbying. And by the way, just so you know, the largest single group of people giving money in the United States to politicians were, you guessed it, the pharmaceutical company. So here's the question. How much money did the pharmaceutical companies give? Well, just the pharmaceutical companies last year gave more than $260 million. $260 million. And to whom did they give that? The politicians. Now, that's just one industry giving more money with more lobbyists, 5-1 lobbyists to politicians. So you got five different lobbyists hitting every politician normally and loading them up with lots of money. So is it any wonder why we have the legislation we do? And then you have those professors at medical schools who are chaired by pharmaceutical, and you have people putting research money into all the major universities and university hospitals, and so they control it. And then you have that money being advertised on television. So can you imagine now that the reality for me is you come up, let's say a year from now, and we're able to get enough people to work with you to do some clinical studies, and you have positive results. You're able to reverse diabetic neuropathy. Reverse it. You're able to reverse herpes. You're able to reverse some degenerative diseases, including some like Alzheimer's or dementia or memory loss. You're suddenly asking a profit-based system to withdrawal about $300 to $400 billion a year from their bank accounts in order to do the right thing. That isn't going to happen. So there has to be another approach, Lynn. What do you suggest that approach be?
Oh, it starts at the grassroots level. You know, I look at myself as one grain of sand on the beaches of the cosmos. What can you do with that? My answer is you can do nothing if we don't start right there, because I think everything that we think or do affects everything else in the cosmos. And it may not be much, but it's a start. You got to take that first step. So it's an evolutionary process of becoming much more aware and astute of what it is that we want our epitaph to say. You know, what happens when the pharmaceutical industry people who have done the things that they have done, or the hospital administrators that have denied care, or blah, 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 what's going to happen to all those people when their life is over? They're going to look back and it'll be 100 years, maybe, of them having a nice, comfortable life with lots of stuff, but it's devoid, it's depraved. They don't have the goodness in their work to show that they've done the things that they should have to make the world a better place. We need to evolve to people who are not narcissistic and primarily and looking after themselves and their own families. We got to be looking at how we can give and share and love and build community. And when we evolve to that place, everything will change. And the goal will be to help people rather than to rape them, you know, with all the things that we take with their money and benefits that they have. So universal health care wouldn't solve a thing. All it would do is perpetuate the system that we have now. It basically is a failure. You look at, we're ranked 37th in the world by the World Health Organization, the overall quality of care. When we have the best resources in the country, we should be the best. But it's not oriented to helping people. It's oriented to make money for companies. And then we overuse those services. We run them into the ground. So what you said is a universal healthcare system based on prevention and lifestyle, which is what you perpetuate and why I love listening to your show, is because that's the right answer. And that's what we can do if we evolve to a place where we really understand what life is about. I spend a lot of time with people that come to see me, a lot of them very wealthy people who are not happy because their lives don't mean much. You know, they have a lot of stuff. They have a lot of money. They got cars and boats, and some of them own hotels. I mean, they're wealthy people. But their kids aren't happy. They're into drugs. Their lives don't feel fulfilled. So it's about becoming the best person you can be. Be the best grain of sand on the beaches of the cosmos and work at the grassroots level. You know, you can't trust Congress. Congress is not a democracy. We live in an economy now. It's based on money. So if you're going to trust Congress to solve it, you're going to be sadly disappointed, just as we are today. We need to do something that's different, something that's based on giving, sharing, and loving and building community and care about our neighbors. When that happens, I don't care what form of government you have. It could be anything. It'll work if it's got good people. Money in itself is a good thing, not a bad thing. It's the way people use it. So I think it's about evolving, not revolution. It's about evolution.
Lynn, explain to us in your lay language to this public what the light therapy and its frequency modulation does, so that once again, we heard from Maurice, but he is an engineer and he's a scientist. And you have to explain this every day to patients, thousands of patients over all these years you two have been working together. Explain once again so we're clearer. How exactly does this work and what exactly is it?
Okay. Light is doing a lot of things that I've mentioned, increasing circulation, reducing inflammation. I didn't mention that it attracts stem cells that are activated to try and heal tissue. It boosts immune function. It can kill microbes. It causes healing to occur. And it works in such a wide range of conditions. There are very few people who come to see me that I don't think about, is this the best treatment to use? You know, I've got to a place where I know internal medicine really well because I've been doing it for 52 years. And I made the conscious choice of not using the drugs and surgeries and other technologies that cause lots of problems. You know, you made a film that I was part of that's called Death by Medicine, which really pointed out there were about a million deaths every year that were related to medical practice. That's an unacceptable number of people. We have to be looking at things that are safer, and this light therapy is easy to use. It takes a bit of training. It does things that you can't do in the mainstream of medicine. The mortality is about zero. I don't know of anybody who's died from using light treatment, and I don't know if even any significant side effects. So for me, in the 52 years I've practiced, I've seen nothing that compares with what this new technology can do. It's safe. It's cheap. It's effective. It works in a wide range of conditions where there's damage to the body. And I think that, you know, if we didn't have these problems with the politics and economics and the narcissistic approach that our whole system works on, this would be in the hands of every doctor. It would be something that would repair all kinds of things, not just curing symptoms, but actually healing tissues. So that's how I look at this, Gary.
This also works for people with herniated discs who otherwise might
Absolutely.
Become septic. It helps people who have ulcers. It helps people who have a fungus and lesions. It helps people with flukes, which are parasites.
Well, it can help take care of a lot of conditions that cause inflammation. And now with these new frequencies that Maurice is working with in this Rife technology, we're seeing ways that we can target things that we could never target before, that are safe, that don't have side effects, that open a whole arena of what we can do as doctors to try and help people who are suffering from symptoms of all these chronic diseases that we're seeing. I treat people with discs almost every day. Somebody came in today with a problem with a cervical disc with radicular pain into their hands. And in about 20 minutes, the head range of motion was increased. The headache was gone. The discomfort that was in the back of the neck was largely relieved. And it may be the first time I saw this person. And over time, if I treat maybe for a period of 1 or 2 or 3 weeks, the bulk of those symptoms are going to disappear. And it doesn't work on everybody. And it doesn't have to be an isolated thing. You can work with chiropractors and acupuncturists, and you can use good nutrition and other lifestyle approaches. You do what you have to do to be integrative. It's not about just doing one thing. But this adds another dimension that I've never seen. And I'm so excited about every time I come to work and I'm looking at my schedule, who am I seeing today? Do I have a couple of new patients? And what about the old ones that are coming back? What can I do that's going to help these people to become more functional? And then, of course, that leads to the deeper issues of why are people sick? We're looking at the psycho-spiritual aspects of what happens to people that leads to them having these symptoms. So as you can tell, I'm pretty stoked about this, and I'm just grateful to Maurice for all the ingenious things he's done. I've never aligned myself with somebody like this. The work he's doing, it's just a privilege to be with him. Thank you.
The two of you remind me of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. They were fictional figures. You're real figures. All right.
I know who Sherlock is.
Yeah. So to Maurice Bales, thank you, Maurice, for all your good work. And again, so everyone understands, this is research in progress. They are trying to demonstrate through clinical studies that the entire medical community should be made aware of this very inexpensive, completely safe therapy. And they've had enough good results with thousands of patients that they should be funded with a large study. And my hope is that, and they have been funded by one study, but you generally need 3 or 4 studies to confirm with other people duplicating their results and coming up with the same conclusions. That's how science is done. So all the best to both of you. And Lynn Saputo his website out in the San Francisco Bay Area at the John Muir, M-U-I-R, Medical Center, where he is Dr. Saputo, SAPUTO.com. Thank you for being with us, fellas.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Noll. And for all of you listening over Zeno Radio, I think around 11,000 more or less stations carry you. Thank you for having us be number one in the world in people listening live, and even number one in the world listening on the archives. We appreciate it because we're up against people like Sean Hannity and Michael Savage and Laura Ingraham and all these other, you know, talk show hosts. So people are wanting to know about health, and we're here to supply that every single day. Have a nice day, everyone. You know.